And today's speaker is Morokoth So, my PhD student from Western Sydney University. And his talk today is going to be on the Persian Sufi tradition, the late 15th century Iran, specifically focusing on Lahiji's commentary upon the Gulshan-e Roz. And he'll talk for 30 minutes and then we'll have 20 minutes unrecorded discussion. Morokoth John, over to you.
Okay. Welcome everybody to my little presentation that I will be doing on, so in a sense, I'll be doing a small and brief presentation telling you about what I have been doing for this past 3.5 years for my PhD. So I've been doing research upon a Sufi figure named Shamsuddin Muhammad Lahiji Gilani. He lived in the late 15th century during the Timurid Akoyunu period. And he died in 1507. So he died while the Safavid Empire was being established in the first decades of the 16th century. But most of my PhD is a textual analysis upon his commentary upon the Gulshan-e Roz. So I guess we just begin with my presentation. So I guess before I get to the meat of my presentation, I think it's necessary to provide some biographical details about Lahiji, like who he was. So just the most basic details. So his full name was Shamsuddin Muhammad Ibn Yahya Lahiji Gilani. So you can tell by the last part of his name, Gilani, that he came from the province of Gilan of northern Iran. And he was born in the city of Lahijan in 1436, between 1436 and 1437. Now, in one of his works called the Asra al-Shuhud, which translates into English as the Divine Mysteries of Witnessing, Lahiji, he claims that when he was about 9 or 10 years old, or when he was still a child, he began his search for a Sufi master, so about 1445. And this was because he had heard about the famed reputation of a certain Sufi sheikh named Muhammad Nurbakhsh. Now, I'm not sure if you heard of this Sufi master, but Shahzad Bashir, he's written a whole book dedicated to this Sufi master, Muhammad Nurbakhsh. I think it's called Messianic Hopes and Mystical Visions. So he was the founder of a sub-branch of the famous Kubrawiya Tariqa called the Kubrawiya Nurbakhshiya Tariqa. And he was also a self-proclaimed Mehdi as well. And at that time, he was residing in a mountain in Gilan because he was trying to escape the persecution of the Timurid Sultan Shah Rukh. So Shamsuddin Lahiji heard about this same Sufi master and he left his hometown Lahijan to travel to meet him. And the moment that he met Muhammad Nurbakhsh, he took an initiation with him and devoted the next 16 to 20 years of his life in close proximity to Muhammad Nurbakhsh. Eventually, they left Gilan and he moved to Ray, which is where Tehran is now. And Muhammad Nurbakhsh established a Khanqah there and he spent the last years of his life there. And according to Shamsuddin Lahiji, in his commentary of the Gulshan-e Roz, he claims that he reached such advanced levels on the Sufi path, even the highest stations of Fana fi Allah, which is annihilation in God, and Baqa bi Allah, which is subsistence in God, that his master Muhammad Nurbakhsh gave him on 3 separate occasions permission to guide and train other Sufi students upon the way of the Sufi tariqa, according to the methodology of the Kubrawiya Nurbakhshiya tariqa. And he even provides a full ijazah in Arabic and provides a full sisila of his Sufi chain within his commentary of the Gulshan-e Roz. Muhammad Nurbakhsh, in his lifetime, already achieved a kind of celebratory status or a fame as a great Sufi master in his lifetime. And I think that is because of his commentary on the Gulshan-e Roz, which after it started circulating among Sufi circles, became considered one of the best commentaries ever written upon the Gulshan-e Roz. So before the death of his master, or probably soon after the death of his master, he left Ray and he immigrated to Shiraz, which is in central southern Iran. And Shiraz was known as one of the great cultural cities of Iran at that time. And he established his own Khanqah there, a Sufi Khanqah, like a Sufi cloister, named the Nuriya Khanqah. And he resided there for 43 years until he eventually passed away. And according to Shamsuddin Iraqi, another student of Muhammad Nurbakhsh, he claims that out of all the caliphs or the sheikhs of the Kubrawiya Nurbakhshiya Tariqa, Shamsuddin Lahiji was the most famed and most sought out of the sheikhs of the Tariqa. And he claims that within the Khanqa of Lahiji's Khanqa, Sufis from all over Iran will come to Shamsuddin's, come to Lahiji's Khanqa and seek his spiritual guidance. Now that we've got that out of the way, I think I need to provide some background information as well on Lahiji's most significant work of Sufism, which in Persian is called the Mafati al-Ijaz Fi Shah Goshan Eraz. Now, Lahiji claims that he began writing his commentary upon the Goshan Eraz in 1473 while he was residing in Shiraz. So while he was a sheikh guiding other disciples upon the way to Tariqa in his Khanqa in Shiraz, he was also writing this book at the same time. So this work is considered the most important work of Lahiji. Now, Lahiji was not a prolific writer or author. He only wrote about 5 to 7 works. So you cannot really compare him to someone like Muhyiddin Ibn Arabi or Imam al-Ghazali or Maulana Jalaluddin Rumi. Nevertheless, he has left a lasting impact and influence on, you could say, the literary theoretical tradition or dimension of the Persian Sufi tradition. And that is because his work, his commentary upon the Goshan Eraz, is considered the best commentary. And it's not only just considered a commentary upon the Goshan Eraz, it's such an extensive commentary. It's probably about 6 or 7 times more larger than the original text of the Goshan Eraz, that it's even considered kind of like an independent work of Sufism, like an encyclopedic work of the Persian Sufi tradition. So this is also the reason why it's also so famous. Now, the modern printed edition of his commentary runs up to about 600 pages. And then there's an extra 200 pages of footnotes. And the reason why is because there's quite a few quotations in Arabic from the Quran and Hadiths that's also been translated as well. But for the most part, the work is written in Persian. About 90% of the text is written in Persian. And this commentary is essentially what I consider an Akbari text. Now, Akbari refers to the intellectual theoretical tradition associated with Ibn al-Arabi and his followers. So eventually it's a text that's part of the collection of texts associated with the Akbari tradition, even though it is not a work written upon a work of Ibn al-Arabi. So when people say this is an Akbari text, you may assume that it is a work written upon Ibn Arabi's Fusus al-Hakim or select passages of the Futuhat Makkiyah, but it is not. It's a work written upon the Goshan Eraz. But the Goshan Eraz was written by a Persian Sufi named Mahmud Shabistari. He lived in the late 13th, early 14th century during the Ilkhanat period. And this work of the Goshan Eraz, it's a Mathnawi poem consisting of about 1,000 verses, also written in Persian. And it also deals with the metaphysics of Ibn Arabi's school of thought. Now, Lahiji's work, even though it is mainly a prose work, it also is filled with abundant poetry because Lahiji himself was a poet. He has a divan collection of ghazals as well. So he was also a poet, but his poet name was As-Siri. And the poetry that he quotes a lot within the commentary of the Goshan Eraz is mainly Rumi, Iraqi, Shamsa Maghribi, and Ibn al-Farez, and this shows the poets that had the most influence upon him, upon his personal style of poetry, but also upon his Sufi teachings and Sufi worldview. Now, I think I just need to get a little bit on the historical religious context upon Shamsuddin Lahiji's life and the context surrounding his work, because one of the aims of my PhD thesis is to contextualize Shamsuddin Lahiji and his masterpiece of Sufism so as to try to reveal the historical significance and contribution of Lahiji upon the later historical developments on the Persian Sufi tradition. So Iran in the late 15th century was divided by various Turco-Mongol dynasties. So Eastern Iran and Central Asia was ruled by the Timurids from the court capitals of Herat and Samarkand. Central Western Iran, Shirvan and Azerbaijan. If you don't know where Shirvan now is what they call Azerbaijan Republic today, but back then it was called Shirvan or Iran. And parts of Eastern Anatolia was ruled by the Turkmen dynasties of either the Karakoyunlu and later on the Akkoyunlus. And they were the rival of the Timurids in their struggle to dominate and rule over all of Iran. So although the religious landscape of Iran during, for the most part, was still predominantly Sunni, as Iran was Sunni for most of the medieval period, ever since the Ilkhanate period, especially with the destruction of the Abbasid Caliphate in Baghdad, there has been a steadily increasingly rise of influence of Shiism, but in its various manifestations of Shiism, in the heterodox, heretical, and orthodox manifestations of Shiism upon the Sunni and Sufi population of Iran. So, and this is the reason why contemporary scholars and historians who research this specific era of Iran's history, they have coined a term called confessional ambiguity. Now, they've coined this term confessional ambiguity because the confessional boundaries separating the Sunni, Shia, and Sufi communities were kind of mellowing and disappearing. And so that there's a kind of merging and mixing between various beliefs and practices and ideas between the Sunni, Shia, and Sufi communities. And in a sense, the Kubrawiya Nobakhshiya Tariqa, which Shamsuddin Lahiji followed, was a historical product and result of this unique situation of confessional ambiguity that reigned in Iran since the Ilkhanate period and until the rise of the Safavids, when the Safavids established the Twelver Shiism as the exclusive state religion of Iran. Now, the Timurid Akkoyunlu period can also be considered a golden age for the Persian Sufi tradition of Iran. And this core capitals of Tabriz and Herat became important centers of Sufism. Some of the most important Sufi masters for the history of the Persian Sufi tradition lived during this specific era of Lahij's lifetime, during the entirety of the 15th century. And I just mentioned some names, like Zainuddin Kwafi, the founder of the Zainiyya Tariqa, Shah Qasim Anwar, Muhammad Nurbakhsh, Lahij's own Sufi master, Maulana Saad ad-Din Kashgari, Jami's Naqshbandi Sufi master, and he's responsible for establishing the Naqshbandi Tariqa in Herat, Khwaja Ubaidallah Ara, probably the most influential Central Asian Sufi master after Shah Naqshband, Ibrahim Ghusseini, the founder of the Kalabeti Ghusseini Tariqa, Pir Yahya Shevani, the second founder of the Kalaweti Tariqa, who established his base of operations in Baku, which is in Shirvan, and Sayyid Abdallah Bazishbadi, the rival to Muhammad Nurbakhsh, and of course, Khwaja Muhammad Pasa and Jami and Lahiji. So I also make the case in my PhD that Sufism had reached the peak of its influence over Persian society and culture during this era, and that the influence of Sufism was far-reaching, and that these great Sufi sheikhs, they had followers from all the different social classes of Iranian society, even from the ruling establishment. And one indication of this is that the ruling Timurid sultans and the Akkoyunlu sultans, they expended much wealth building khanqahs for Sufi masters, but also building lavish shrine complexes over the tombs of Sufi saints. The most famous example is the Timurid shrine complex built over this tomb of Khwaja Ubaidallah Ara, Ansari in Herat. So, okay. Now I get to the purpose of my research. Now, Probably the main purpose of my research is that I wish to provide to contextualize the life of Lahiji and his most important work of Sufism, the commentary of the Ghoshan Raz, the Mafati al-Ijaz, thereby revealing the historical significance of Lahiji, but also make the case that Lahiji, he wasn't so much a original thinker. Like him and the Sufi masters who wrote books and treatises in the 15th century. Like the most famous example is him and Jami, Lahiji and Jami, They were not original thinkers like the more famous legendary predecessors in the Persian Sufi tradition, like, for example, Imam Ghazali, Mawlana Jalaluddin Rumi, Atta Nishpori, Wuzbehan Bakri Shirazi, and Khuzat Hamadani. Nevertheless, they did have an impact upon the later historical development of the Persian Sufi tradition, because I make the case that they were historical agents of transmission. In a sense, their historical role was that they systematized, consolidated, and gathered together and collected the entire intellectual and literary heritage of the medieval Persian Sufi tradition, because Lahiji and Jami were living in the closing decades of the medieval period, and they transmitted to future generations of Sufis, especially those Sufis living in the early modern period, that is between the 16th to the 18th century, that important heritage of the Persian Sufi tradition within their works. And that is why within his commentary of the Gulshan Araz, and I think this is why the work has been so popular among Sufi and Irfani circles within Iran and even beyond Iran for many centuries, is because it's an encyclopedic, comprehensive work that contains all the main discussions, ideas, teachings of the Persian Sufi community. Now, my second aim too is that I wish to introduce Lahiji to a wider audience within the English-speaking world who have an interest in Sufism, especially Sufism in its manifestations within the context of medieval Iran and in Persian language and Persian culture, because I believe that Lahiji is a very important Sufi figure for the history and the tradition of Persian Sufism. And because his work, the commentary of the Gulshan Araz, is undoubtedly considered a masterpiece in theoretical philosophical Sufism in the Persian language. Now, Lahiji, of course, is a very well-known figure in Iran. And I think proof of this is that the edition that I use for the commentary of the Gulshan Araz, I used the 8th edition. So it's been reprinted 8 times. So I think that's proof of its popularity even in Iran today. So, and I think that, I believe that my contribution to the wider field of research is that by offering the other thing that I'll be doing in my PhD research is that I'll be offering a systematic exposition upon Lahiji's Sufi worldview or his Sufi teachings as it can be found within the pages of his commentary. And I believe that by providing a systematic exposition and contextualizing his works and his book, I'll be able to discern the hidden patterns of historical historical change that was occurring for the Persian Sufi tradition and the community within the late 15th century of Iran, and how these important changes and developments impacted the later history of Sufism within the early modern period of Iran. And of course, these developments not just impacted the Sufi communities, not only living within the historical borders of Iran or the Safavi period, but also those countries as well, like the Indian subcontinent or Anatolia or Central Asia, who are also affected by the latest intellectual, cultural, and spiritual trends emanating from Iran. Because in a sense, all these countries were parts of the Persianate world. And Iran has always been the heart and the center of the Persianate world. So although numerous scholars have done a very important work for the history of Sufism, the Persian Sufi tradition during the Timurid and Akkoyunlu period, especially like Hamid Algar and Shahzad Bashir, no one has really focused upon any of the works written by the great Sufi masters. And in a sense, I feel like this is an important gap that needs to be filled. They've no doubt done valuable historical research, especially Devon Dawis, upon historical changes happening, especially the way that Sufis organized themselves and propagated their message and teachings to a wider audience. And Devon Dawis, who I believe is one of the best scholars who has done research on the history of Sufism during this specific period. I agree with him in the point that he makes that during the late Timurid period, this was an important time for the further institutional consolidation and maturity of the Sufi tariqas. that was occurring in the later medieval period, so that Sufis nowadays, when they identify themselves with a specific silsila, if you know what this concept is, silsila, silsila denotes the idea that the Sufi tariqas, they possess a spiritual lineage, a broken chain of transmission of Sufi, saintly Sufi masters that stretches back all the way to the Prophet Muhammad, and they base the legitimacy and the authority of their tariqah and the collection of spiritual Sufi practices and teachings that they teach to their students are based upon this silsila. But Devon the Wiz believes that this was a late construction that only came into development and maturity and being during the Timurid period. So in a sense, this was an era of consolidation and systematization of the Persian Sufi tradition. Now, what have I discovered through my research? Okay, 10 more minutes. Now, one of the historical, problems or questions that popped into mind, because I studied the Farsi language in Iran in 2017. So I was in Iran for the whole year in 2017, studying the Farsi language. And I needed to find a book or a text that to study with one of my Iranian professors in Shiraz, because I specialized in classical Farsi literature, and especially those texts that was part of the Sufi genre. And I soon discovered that Shamsuddin Lahija's commentary of the Gulshan Araz was considered the best works of Sufism in the Persian language. Like, this was like a common consensus, and that it was the undisputed best commentary of the Gulshan Araz. I forgot to tell you guys, but the Gulshan Araz of Muhammad Shabistari is the most commentated work of any work in the textual tradition of the Persian Sufi tradition. In fact, there's an Iranian professor, I forgot his name, but he claims that in the National Library of the National Library in Tehran University, which has the largest collection of manuscripts of Iran's history, he discovered 40 different commentaries that have been written upon the Gulshan Araz. So therefore, this is the most commentated work. There's been no other work in the whole history of Sufism in the Persian language that has more commentaries have been written upon it. And Lahija's commentary is considered the best. So I think the first and most notable feature when I was reading Lahija's commentary, and I've read the whole book in this Persian language under the support and guidance of my Iranian professors in Shiraz, is that it's a comprehensive work. This is the feature that I think any reader will notice, first of all, when reading this work. It is a comprehensive work that contains within itself, in clear exposition by Lahiji, in simple and fluid Persian prose, the main ideas and doctrines and teachings of the Persian Sufi community of the medieval period. So those ideas that will be widely circulated, discussed, and debated by all the different Persian Sufi tariqas, no matter what tariqa they followed, whether it was the Naqshbandi, the Qubawiyya, the Surawandiyya, the Nimatuwali, the Khalwati tariqa, you can find it in this work. And so this work, the reason why it's such a comprehensive work is because Lahiji, like Jami, but this was also a cultural phenomenon amongst the wider Persian Sufi community, is that it successfully synthesizes and integrates within itself the two main doctrinal streams of Sufism that were then existent within the Persian Sufi community in the medieval period. And that is the Akbari tradition of Ibn Arabi and his followers, especially those commentaries surrounding the Fusus al-Hakim and the religion of love of the Persian Sufis, which they sometimes call the Madab-e-Ishq. Now, this term religion of love refers to those followers of Sufism who considered the path of Sufism the path of love. And they use very poetic terms to describe the intense, emotional, ecstatic a relationship with God as the beloved. And these Sufis, they chose the form and vehicle of poetry, especially Persian poetry, to give forth expression their feelings of longing and love for the divine beloved. And of course, the most famous exponent of this religion of love this creed of love is, of course, Rumi, this Masnavi. And Rumi and the most famous work of this tradition of religion of love is, of course, the Masnavi of Maulana Jalaluddin Rumi. But then you also have other famous Sufi sheikhs of this religion of love, like Ahmad Ghazali, Ruzbehan Bakhli Shirazi, Atta Nishpori, and Hakim Sanai, and Fakhruddin Iraqi. But Lahiji was also a follower of this tradition, like Anjami, and he integrates these two intellectual streams of Sufism within his work. So therefore, I also argue for the case that Lahiji's work can therefore be viewed as a kind of valuable historical document, because it provides a window to us modern contemporary readers into the religious spiritual landscape of late 15th century Iran and Central Asia. And it details and provides for us the Sufi worldview of Lahiji, which was shared and which was common amongst all the Sufi followers of Persian ethnic background living in the late 15th century, whether there were Persian Sufis within Iran or in Central Asia. Okay, next.
Murijan, sorry to interrupt. You have 1 minute.
Okay, I have 1 minute. Okay, sorry. Okay. So, 1 minute. Okay. What's important about Lahiji's work too is that it is one of the only few works during the Timurid Akhuninulun period that provides a systematic exposition of the entire Akbari school of thought in the Persian language. Now, this is important because before the Timurid Akhuninulun period, all texts that were part of the Akbari tradition were written exclusively in Arabic. So even though Ibn Arabi's students and followers who wrote the classic commentaries of the Fusus al-Hakim were for the most part Persians, except for Dawud Kaysari, they nevertheless wrote their commentaries upon the Fusus in Arabic. And this limited the accessibility to the works of Ibn Arabi and his commentaries to the Akbari tradition for Sufis of Persian ethnic background, because you needed to possess a mastery of the Arabic language if you wanted to access Ibn Arabi's works and the Akbari texts that surrounded his works. And I think the main reason why is because Arabic has always been considered a more technical language, a language that's more suited for metaphysics, philosophy and science. And maybe that is why Iran's greatest philosopher, or the most greatest Persian philosopher in history, Ibn Sina, he, even though he was Persian, he wrote all his philosophical works also in Arabic as well. But by the time of the Timurid period, you start to see a steady increase of works devoted to Ibn Arabi's school of thought being written in Persian. And I think the first Sufi who wrote Akbari text in Persian was Sayyid Ali Hamidani, who was a sheikh of the Kubariya Tariqa, and he lived in the late 14th, early 15th century. But Lahiji... his work is important because he writes in such a clear and, like, his prose is so clear, simple, and fluid, and he possesses a certain lucidity and clarity to it. And so that he was a gifted teacher. There was no doubt he was a gifted teacher because he had this uncanny gift of simplifying the most complex and difficult ideas related to the Akbari tradition. And so that regardless of your level on the Sufi path or your level of Farsi, like, you could understand what he was talking about. And the thing is, Farsi is not even my first language. It is my second language. But nevertheless, I find Shamsuddin Lahiji's text one of the most easiest works to understand and to comprehend. And I think this is the other reason why his works have been so popular.
Mm.